Hey, you're listening to the Hack Summer podcast with me, Joe Lauder. And every week we're going to be bringing you some of our favourite stories, our favourite moments on radio from 2019. And we're going to be having a bit of a chat about what went on with that story, some maybe some surprising secrets that you didn't know went into the work behind it. Joining me today is our incredible political reporter in Canberra. She's our person in Parliament House, Shalila Madora. And Shalila, 2019, we've kind of forgotten, but it was a massive year for you, especially because we had an election.
Yeah, actually, I'd forgotten about it till you mentioned it. Thanks for bringing that trauma up again, Joe. I really appreciate that. But yeah, it was a really big year in politics. And as always, like, we always try to bring you politics as it happens, but it's not really very much of a summer vibe. So
we're not going to be talking about politics
today?
We're
not going to be talking about politics today, no. We're going to talk about some of the fun stuff that I get to do, which admittedly isn't very often. I often have to do, like, the serious, important news. But I do occasionally get to do fun stuff.
Oh, man, and you own it when you get to do it. This first story that you've brought us is probably one of my just highlights of Hack from 2019. Just getting to hear this story is incredible. How did you uncover it?
Yeah, sometimes you just get really lucky in this job. And I came across this story by accident because Pete is a friend of a friend. And I found out through that friend that he is at, or was at the time, offering up his sperm to another friend who wanted to have a baby. She's a single woman and she decided it was time. And he was like, yep, I'll help you out. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, that is a story. That is such a good story. So yeah, I just got in touch with him and asked him if he would be happy to speak to us about it. And thankfully he was.
Have you ever sat outside a room before waiting impatiently for a man's jizz?
Well, probably, but not knowingly.
Not in this context.
You're listening to a jizz diary.
I've got specimen containers.
Excellent.
And syringes. I'm also intending to use a menstrual cup.
This is the moment Pete is handing over his sperm to his friend Jane with the hopes of getting her pregnant.
Well, the deed is done, so nothing much left for it now except to hand it over. I'm really excited. It feels a bit surreal.
They're avoiding the fertility clinic and giving this a crack at home.
The process from here is that I'm pretty much going to go into bedroom 2 and jizz into a jar. Well, I've had a little bit of time to sort of work myself up while you had a shower. So, yeah.
All right,
okay. Mwah. Good luck. Nice to see there's some candles lit there. Set the mood. Yeah. Love you. Bye. Not as awkward as I thought it might be.
Well, I always assumed it would be kind of traditional. Like, I had figured that I'd meet someone and have kids.
Pete and Jane's journey started nearly 2 years ago when Jane decided it was time to stop waiting for Mr. Right and take matters into her own hands.
I sort of found myself single at 34 after, you know, coming out of a long-term relationship, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it by myself.
The pair go way back. Jane went to uni with Pete's sister.
Jane became almost part of our family. She's come along on family holidays, and all my siblings and my parents know and love her.
As a gay man, Pete came to realise that he'd never have kids the typical way.
I've always absolutely adored kids, as does my husband, but we had about zero desire to actually raise a child. For a long time, I'd always thought if a situation came along where there was somebody who I could help, I knew that I would be really open to doing that.
When Pete heard about Jane's plans to have a baby via donor sperm, he thought maybe he could lend a helping hand, so to speak. After Pete's husband gave them the green light, he and Jane started making formal arrangements. The pair sat down and worked out a comprehensive donor agreement.
I found a family lawyer local to me. She gave us a template, just basically with everything you could possibly talk about, you know, grandparent access down the track, or how the extended families would be involved, you know, whether the donor will be on the birth certificate or not, who gets to name the child, who has financial responsibility.
The agreement is kind of like a prenup. It's not necessarily legally binding, but in case their relationship sours, it gives both parties an idea of what they'd wanted out of this. It also helped them iron out any sticking points about how their child would be raised.
I think at this juncture, we are probably more prepared for this than a lot of straight couples.
Which brings us back to this.
Once a month last year, Jane was flying me over to Perth to jizz into a little jar in her spare room, walk her down the corridor, knock on her bedroom door and say, "There you go, babes, legs in the air for 30 minutes, good luck, see you at breakfast."
They've had some pretty hilarious moments in their journey and some heartbreaking ones too.
We did go through 2 miscarriages in trying to get to this point.
They've had a lot of support along the way.
I have a number of sisters, of course, they all know, you know, they're really, really excited.
My dad gave like a little speech about how wonderful they thought it was and how they supported it and they welcomed Pete into our family.
But they're still worried about how people will react. That includes people who know and love them.
Mum and Dad are great, but just from the background they have as conservative Christians. So there were some less than wonderful responses involved in the engagement and marriage of my husband over the last couple of years. We think that they will actually be really excited once they have a day or two to think about it.
Pete's parents now know the good news, and they're pretty excited because Jane's pregnant. Their little girl is due in November.
This little girl will know from her earliest that I am her father. My name will be on the birth certificate, although I will fulfil a slightly more of a doting uncle style of role.
Pete, his family and his husband plan to be around for all the highs and lows of that baby's life, which suits Jane just fine.
I always want our daughter to know that she was 100% wanted, and for us to be totally honest about her, you know, how she came into the world and how much we love her and wanted her.
Triple J.
Oh my gosh, Talala, I wish you could somehow insert the words Jizz Diary into every story that you do.
I think it's relevant to a lot of politics, to be honest.
Oh, it's so incredible, and they're just such great people to tell a story about. They really brought it to life.
In the industry, we call it talent. Like, a person that you interview is great talent. And I really struck gold with this one because until I heard the Jizz Diaries, and it was, you know, full props to our former EP, Carla Arnold, who was like, "Hey, you should hit up Pete and see if he's willing to do a Jizz Diary." I would never have thought of it myself. And it was just such a good idea because it really set the tone. It really...
Oh, you're in the room.
You're in the room and you get to find out like the weird logistics that you never thought you really wanted to know about this process.
The turkey basters.
The needleless syringes, like the whole vibe about like how awkward it is. I think the thing that I really loved about it was it's such an awkward mechanical kind of process that they're going through, and yet the outcome is so beautiful and so personal and, you know, really tugs at your heartstrings. So actually, until I heard the Jizz Diaries, I'd never spoken to Pete in person. I didn't know what he was like. I'd only ever really texted him. And when I heard the Jizz Diaries, I was like, oh my God, I have struck journalistic gold and I didn't do any work to find this person. The story just landed in my lap completely. So yeah, I was very, very lucky with how it kind of panned out.
And one of the things with that story, and it might have caught people by surprise, is there was actually a lot of really sad moments and there's been a lot of heartbreak with Jane trying to get pregnant. Where are we at the moment? Do we know do we have an update on the baby, but also about Pete's family?
Yeah, we do. So since the story aired in the middle of last year, they have had a beautiful baby girl. She was born in November. Aww. And I was lucky enough to have a chat to Pete and Jane together when Pete went over to meet his baby girl for the first time. Let's have a listen.
Hello, this is Pete.
Hey, Pete, it's Shalila. How you doing?
Hey, really good, Shalila. How are you?
Good, and I believe that you have got Jane there as well.
I do.
Yeah, hi, Shalila.
What was it like when you had the baby? Tell me about what being a new parent is like for you.
Well, it was pretty full on. So I had my twin sister with me for the labour and ended up having an unplanned cesarean. So it was all a bit overwhelming and dramatic in the end. Just like can't believe after all of that kind of planning and work and, you know, heartbreak as well with miscarriages that she was finally here. It was amazing.
Pete, tell me what it was like when you first met your daughter.
My heart just leapt. You see so many cute babies in your life and they're all gorgeous, but it's just utterly surreal to look at a, you know, tiny little baby girl and say, wow, this is actually half me. I'd say it was one thing seeing all the photos come through from Jane, then another step again today, actually meeting our little daughter in real life. I've been singing Britney to her because I think it's really important that she gets a good early education in old school Britney.
What was it like when you did actually tell your parents about the baby?
My father was absolutely ecstatic straight off the block, which was really nice. Mum sort of said, okay, you know what, it's not a situation that I, you know, would choose myself ordinarily, you know, like, because anything that is outside of a heterosexual, you know, marriage is outside of mum's blinkers. But so long story short, mum and dad are ecstatic and absolutely over the moon. And how can you not?
And so I guess some of those fears that you had around maybe them not being quite so excited, those didn't come to pass.
No, that's right. I mean, maybe a little bit at the very start when mum first found out. She just had to, you know, get her head around things. They are just absolutely over the moon.
What was the reaction after the story went to air?
It's funny how whatever you do in your own life becomes normalised fairly quickly in your own head. Like, it doesn't seem that unusual, things don't seem that unusual to you because it's just what you're doing. It made me realise that afresh, that this was like a situation that was unique, you know, because I had just become so used to it.
It's actually been a really positive thing to be quite open and honest about what we were doing. And even like in hospital, got sort of questions from people occasionally, because I guess it's more the norm, asking about your partner and all of that. But again, when I sort of said, oh, no, the father's a friend, he's a donor, they were all kind of, oh, that's great. And a few of them said, oh, I had my children by a donor. While it's still not super common, I guess, to have donor children, there are lots of them. And for me, that's been a really positive thing. I feel like a little bit nervous about sort of entering single parenthood properly. But, you know, I do have family in Perth and lots of support. So, yeah, I feel positive about it too.
You're listening to the Hack Summer podcast, and we're bringing you our favourite moments of 2019. And today, Shalila Medora, our Canberra reporter, our political reporter, is talking about her favourite non-political moments. And this next one is something that I think you're going to love if you're in the summer mood.
Summer loving had me a blast.
Summer loving happened so fast.
Yeah, it's that time of year where some of you might be indulging in a bit of a cheeky summer fling. Well, in June, we looked at what happens when those flings get kind of serious.
Yeah, so as you mentioned at the start, Jo, I am the politics nerd. But I really secretly, or maybe not so secretly, love talking to people about their relationships. I love it. It's one of my favourite things about this job.
You also love The Bachelor, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I do. I unashamedly do. And so I just love talking to people and finding out how they met and like what the problems are in their life and just really like getting deep with people about their own personal relationships. And the idea for this particular story started when I was driving back to Canberra from Sydney, and I heard someone call up Sally and Erica to talk about how she was driving across the country for a guy she'd only just met.
Oh my God.
And it made me think, there must be a lot of us out there who took a leap on love. So I wrote an article based on this young woman who rang up Sally and Erica, and we had hundreds of responses to this article, hundreds of responses, some good, some bad, some hilarious, but it made me think, okay, this needs to be a radio story. And so that's how it came about.
Amazing. It makes me feel like I'm not brave enough in my own life to just like get in a car to go and just meet them and see what happens.
I'm way too cynical. So yeah, it's not going to happen from my end. But yeah, the case studies that we got in this particular story, which you'll hear in a sec, were really representative of the overall comments we got. We had some people ring up and tell us that they, you know, were like unsure about someone, but they thought, you know, who cares? I'm going to do this, and have been with that person for years. We had some people go, yeah, I'm going to be romantic and indulgent, and then find out that the person that they dropped everything for was horrible. So, you know, you win some, you lose some, but everyone we spoke to was so open with their lives that it just kind of made it really fun.
Bridget met Ben during a holiday to the snow.
We ended up getting on the same chairlift together, and when we got off the chairlift, he accidentally pushed me over.
Bridget thought nothing of it until...
Then 2 nights later, we met in a bar and he asked if he could buy me a drink.
Ben was sure she was the girl he'd knocked over.
No, it wasn't love at first sight. And I was on a holiday, so I didn't really think sort of much of it. I just thought, you know, bit of fun, meet a guy.
Bridget then had to head home to Noosa and Ben back to the central coast of New South Wales. But Ben couldn't stop thinking about Bridget, and he asked her to come visit for a weekend.
So I thought, why not? I'll do that. But I ended up being here for about 3 or 4 weeks.
It was a pretty big risk to take.
We're about to land in Newcastle, and I remember thinking that I have really no idea who this guy is. I'd only spent, you know, 2 days with him, and I've just flown interstate. So I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I hope he's not, you know, a weirdo.
That was 4 years ago.
We're married. We got married in 2016, and I just had my first baby with him. So things can definitely work out.
Bridget's leap of faith was life-altering. But as Aaron knows, sometimes taking a leap is just about acting on your gut instinct.
Okay, so the first time I met my partner was actually at a mate's 21st birthday.
The two of them hit it off straight away. So much so that Aaron decided to throw a party a few weeks later just so he could see her again.
And ended up spending the whole night together, just sitting next to each other, chatting to everyone, arms around each other, that kind of thing. Eventually, obviously, it's time for her to get it going. I was like, yeah, no worries, I'll walk you back to your car kind of thing.
Aaron summoned up all his courage and went in for the goodnight kiss.
And she screamed and sort of yelled and ran away.
A mutual friend filled Aaron in on the situation.
So she explained to me, she's like, oh, she's just gone through a breakup. Oh, okay, I didn't realise that. She's like, yeah, her and her girlfriend only just broke up. Oh, girlfriend. And so that was how I found out she was bi.
It seemed like Aaron's luck was up. And then love came through with the goods.
Got to get to know each other again a bit more and went on a date. And now we've been together for almost 3 years.
Okay, so Aaron and Bridget's leaps of faith paid off. But love isn't all champagne and lollipops, as Taylor knows too well.
Wasn't looking for anything at all, and it was a big shock when it happened.
Taylor was weeks away from the trip of a lifetime when she met a guy. There were fireworks.
You know, our lives seemed to click immediately. It was, like, really out of the blue.
But the wheels were already in motion, and Taylor pressed on with her plans to live and work overseas.
I spoke to him a lot about it and about how we felt, and he kind of said, you know, if you come home, we can definitely, you know, hang out and see if we feel the same.
Taylor was like, f*** it, I'm all in. So she cut her trip short and flew home to see if the two of them could rekindle their romance.
Yeah, I guess I thought, you know, if I make this huge effort to be with someone, like, surely they'll make a small effort to at least try.
After 2 weeks back home, he ghosted her.
Avoiding me, not, you know, hanging out or speaking to me at all. And so after 2 weeks, I called him out on it and he pretty much disappeared. I've kind of had to give up part of my overseas travels and that experience. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do it again.
And then there were times when going all in for love has ended up being a lesson more than anything else. Here's Michaela's story.
I started talking to this guy on Tumblr. He surprised me and he drove from Brisbane down to Newcastle and stayed with me for a week and took me to my Year 12 formal.
Michaela thought the whole thing was super romantic.
I thought it was perfect. It was like my little fairy tale that started happening right in front of me.
The fairy tale lasted for quite a few years. And then
I came home early from work, and as I walked through the door, there was a naked girl standing in my lounge room.
Her partner was nowhere to be seen.
I then heard a door close, and I walked over to the laundry, and he was hiding in there completely naked. I pretty much just broke up with him on the spot.
Turns out Michaela's partner had been cheating with a lot of different people for a long time. And while it was an awful experience, Michaela's looking on the bright side.
Definitely a lot more cautious, but it's made me wiser in a way, and I think I will not get hurt in the same way again, hopefully.
Hack. Triple J.
So, Shalala, because you're our federal politics reporter, you're based in Parliament House in Canberra, and I'm not going to say you have a chip on your shoulder, but I feel like you're always reminding us that actually the ACT is a really, really cool, progressive place to live, right?
Yeah, I just like to remind people that Parliament House and Canberra aren't the same thing, I think. I think people forget that. They just assume that what happens in federal politics is what's going on in Canberra, but Canberra is actually a really quietly progressive part of the country. Often there are things that happen in this territory that don't happen anywhere else in the country and wouldn't be able to happen anywhere else in the country.
There was a major example of this in 2019.
There sure was, and that was the legalisation of cannabis, which actually had been floated a little bit prior to when it was passed. It was floated by a Labor backbencher, a young guy who was only in his 20s, and he thought, we should do this. And so it went through a few committees and then came out the other side and basically, yeah, passed in October. Because Labor's been in power for like close to 20 years in the ACT, and a lot of that time has been with the Greens, I think it has quite an ambitious agenda. And so we really see that coming through in a lot of the politics. The changes around the legalisation of cannabis come through later this month. So we thought it would be a really good time to just remind you of what those changes are.
All right, well, let's see how many weed songs you managed to fit into one story.
If you live in the ACT and are aged 18 and over, from January 31st next year, you'll be able to grow your own. 28-year-old ACT Labor backbencher Michael Pedersen was the driving force behind this bill.
You can have 50 grams of cannabis, you can grow two plants and a household limit of four plants, and that is legal.
Under the changes, it'll be legal to possess and cultivate small amounts of cannabis in Canberra. Buying or selling or even sharing a spliff at a party would not be legal. Chief Police Officer for the ACT, Ray Johnson, told Hack in a statement that trafficking is still an offence.
It should also be noted that it remains an offence under ACT law to supply any amount of cannabis. The offence of supplying drugs does not require the exchange of money.
You also won't be able to consume the drug in public. So, say you're going to a festival in Canberra. You'll be allowed to have up to 50 grams of weed on you, but you can't use it while you're there. Sorry, Jarvis Bay folks, you're technically part of the ACT, but you're not covered under the changes. And if you're under 18, you're not covered either. Assistant Commissioner Johnson said the new laws won't change roadside drug testing.
It is important to note it will remain an offence to drive a motor vehicle with any level of cannabis in a driver's system. And ACT policing will continue to test for the presence of cannabis and other drugs.
Until these changes passed the ACT Legislative Assembly yesterday, all states and territories in Australia had laws that matched up with Commonwealth laws. Now the ACT has broken rank. But Commonwealth laws still make it a crime to possess even small amounts of cannabis.
If you're in the ACT waking up today and you want to possess marijuana, be careful because there are Commonwealth laws that still apply.
Absolutely, there is a risk that people might be caught and charged under Commonwealth legislation.
President of the Police Officers Union, Angela Smith, told ABC Radio that inconsistency between laws leaves cops in a tricky position.
There needs to be a direction from the hierarchy of the AFP to allow police officers, to allow ACT policing to know what their next step is.
The Federal Attorney General, Christian Porter, told radio station 6PR he's going to sit down with them to hear their concerns.
That's something that I will meet with them about and receive their views on.
And in case jurisdictional law isn't confusing enough, here's an extra layer. The ACT is a territory, not a state. That means the feds can effectively overturn territory laws. It's done this in the past when the ACT tried to bring in euthanasia and same-sex marriage. And Attorney General Porter isn't ruling out doing it again on the cannabis laws.
I'll have a look at the actual bill and see how it actually interacts with the Commonwealth law.
It's fair to say senior members of the federal government aren't particularly keen on legalising cannabis.
Look, this is a terribly dangerous drug, marijuana. It destroys individual lives.
The THC content in much of the cannabis today, because it's grown in factories essentially, not in a rural setting, is quite dangerous.
It's a very significant mental health risk. I think that the ACT has not taken these factors into account.
When I'm driving around Canberra, I don't want to be driving along one side of the road and see somebody veering along the other side of the road if they've been on pot, on hooch, on marijuana. I don't want to be sharing the road with a pothead.
And the opposition in the ACT, who voted against the changes, warned this law could open Pandora's box.
It's very clear from the messages being put out by some of the Greens members and some of the Labor members, this is a first step. They want to go further, potentially with cannabis and potentially with other drugs as well.
All of this is a way of saying that nothing's really certain here.
The ACT government is pretty sure its cannabis laws will hold up.
I and the ACT government are very confident that ACT can legalise cannabis not only in practice, but in legal effect as well.
But the Commonwealth's not so sure.
So whether or not this law actually does what it seeks to do is an open question at the moment.
Hack Triple J.
Yeah, Shalala, as you mentioned in that package, there's a question mark over whether the federal government is going to allow this, and it's meant to be happening later this month. What has happened since those laws passed in October?
Yeah, so shortly after the laws were passed, the federal Attorney General, Christian Porter, advised that they weren't valid because possession is still illegal under federal law. So what that means is the federal police, the Australian federal police, could still arrest people for possession, even if the amount they're carrying is under the ACT limit. So we've basically now got this like weird thing where there's a bit of a standoff. The ACT government hasn't backed down or changed the law, and the federal governments haven't from their side either. So it's completely possible that once these laws come into place, we could actually have people arrested under federal possession laws, and those cases could be the basis of a legal challenge.
Oh, yeah. So there's going to be a lot of interesting times ahead in 2020, seeing what happens here legally.
Absolutely. Definitely one to watch.
Shalala, these were three amazing moments for Hack in 2019. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing them.
Thank you for having me.
Hack on Triple J.